This is The Huddle.
This is not this. This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2. The Huddle.
It's a special Wednesday edition of The Huddle. Stacey Ross here with Jake Heaps and Dave Wyman, and we're ready to get rolling into week 2. We'll start with a look back to Sunday's win over Atlanta, because who doesn't want that? But then we're going to turn to the Patriots. We've got an opponent preview coming up at 12:30. Plus, we'll talk to tight end Will Disley and center Ethan Posick. That's coming up in hour 2, but let's get started right now. Dave, we've had a few days to digest the Seahawks' first game of the season. How are you feeling about this team today?
Well, I always feel a little bit worse when I start looking at the opponent and it's a good one. So, you just can't rest on your laurels. And we'll be saying that probably next week, too, even though it's Miami. But it was just such a nice start. Russell, he was so good. And I know that's kind of understating it, but, you know, he set a new franchise percentage record, completion percentage. Beat Dave Craig, my old buddy Dave Craig, set it back in 1988. But he just looked really on top of it, especially when the first play of the game, he just gets killed for a sack. And, you know, and he probably should have checked out of that, but I'm still, it's just that he just seemed to, and I don't want to, like, you know, encourage the cooking people, but the whole offense, as Jim puts it, the whole offense just kind of flowed through him. And, you know, he just did such a great job. So that was really cool. And then, of course, Jamal Adams and, you know, Bobby Wagner, the defense, Quentin Dunbar did some really good things. Quandre Diggs. So yeah, it was just a really nice kind of surprise, because it usually takes them a while to get going. And the way the offense operated, I think, is what really stood out to me.
Now I got to ask you, since you're also a former linebacker, what did you think about the defense?
Well, I mean, you know, in the beginning, they sort of struggled to stop the run. I want to say the first six runs, they gave up like 7 yards per carry, and then the rest of the way they shut them down. But you know, they were just so active. I mean, they compiled a lot of yards. Here's what I would say. I think they just faced quite possibly the best receiver duo and quite possibly the best quarterback that they'll face all year. I mean, you can make the argument Amari Cooper with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb, but we'll see about that. But I thought they're really good. So they did chew up a lot of yards, but they made lots of plays here and there. And so there was the way I put it, I think it's very promising that there are some good things that, you know, I think can happen on defense. Obviously, Jamal Adams, just ridiculously good. But I was, that's kind of what I came away from. I did a football 101 thing. I don't think it's up yet, but I did it on Quentin Dunbar, because he did a couple of things in the run game that were really special, really special. And one of them was stopping a fly sweep by just getting outside and reading it and diagnosing it. We haven't stopped a fly sweep here in 3 years. So there was a lot of, like I said, a lot of things like that. LJ Collier, you know, forcing a penalty and a throwaway. I mean, there was a lot of good little promising things that happened amidst, you know, the fact that they gave up a lot of yards.
Dave, and that's a fantastic point about Dunbar, because you look at it from a coverage perspective, he didn't necessarily have the most stellar day, but it's not just about coverage. It's about how you are in the run game as well. And I think that's one of the things that you can take away from this, is that this game, defensively at least, that they weren't perfect coming out of the gate week one. It's really difficult to do that, especially not having a preseason involved. But they did make key plays in key moments, and that's something you've definitely got to feel positive about.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, like I said, lots of promise there. The funny thing was, Stacey and Jake, that I went out to practice, And I watched what Jamal Adams did in that game every day, except I thought, well, I don't know if he can do that in a game. And he went out and did it. I mean, it was just exactly like I saw in practice, you know. So, and I thought maybe it was a little bit too good to be true, but that guy's just a ball of energy. Some of my favorite plays that he made, he came up and just blasted Julio Jones, who was trying to block him. Actually got Julio mad at him. Then he covered him on a deep in. I mean, it was really, or a dig route. I mean, that was special. He did a lot of really good things, but he affected a lot of plays, even the plays where he wasn't making a tackle for a loss, or, you know, a tackle in, you know, hitting the quarterback. I mean, a lot of the other plays that he made really affected, you know, allowed other guys to make plays.
Well, Dave, talking about the game has been fun, but I think everybody is curious from your perspective on game day. What was that like calling the game from remote, and what was the setup and the situation there?
Well, we were in a suite over at CenturyLink, and there was huge monitors set up everywhere and cables and cords going everywhere. They built like a bench. I mean, I know Lloyd Glazer was a part of it, Brian O'Connell, coordinates all that stuff. And some of the people at CenturyLink Field, I mean, they just had this thing, you know, just wired up. I mean, we had huge screens in front of us. For a while, we didn't have the All-22, so, which is just a shot of the field. It's just a constant shot of the field. So we couldn't see who was running on and off the field, so it was a little bit of a struggle. But Rabel is just such a pro, and don't tell him I said this later on, but he's unbelievable. He really makes it sound so good. I loved his call on the DK Metcalf touchdown about, you know, you're trying to single cover me, forget about it. So he did a great job. It was interesting, but it was fun, man. I just happy to have football back.
Now, were you surprised? I'm assuming you're talking about that 4th and 5, I think a 38-yarder to Metcalf. Were you surprised to see Seattle go for it there?
Well, they did that last year in Carolina with David Moore. And the other thing that I saw at practice while I was out there is them throw about 100 of those passes to DK Metcalf. I mean, that's just something that they can do. He's a big body. It was weird watching it on the All-22 because I saw it at practice quite a bit too, where you're like, oh man, Russell way overthrew him. But what you don't get from that shot is the arc that's always on Russ's, you know, deep ball. It's always like a punt almost coming down out of the air. And then, you know, DK Metcalf, I mean, he just threw a perfect pass there. It was just like there's just such a small margin for error there, and he just put it right in, you know, about the size of a cereal box downfield. That's the target that he hit there. So just really, really impressed by that. And I saw them practicing that quite a bit as well.
Dave, you look at this offense and you just look at the personnel that they have, running backs, receivers, tight ends. I mean, and then you go out and see the way they executed with Russell Wilson on Sunday. How dynamic is this group? How much did that impress you?
It really did. I mean, and everybody got involved, it seemed like. I mean, you know, Chris Carson catching the ball, which I think is a great way to use him. I mean, he's got really good hands, as Pete talked about during the week. But also, you're giving him the ball out in space instead of in the box, and it's a pretty safe throw. And last year, he averaged like 7 yards every time he caught a football. So I thought that was good. Then Olsen working the zone. I mean, the way he was so patient waiting for that to clear, and then, you know, where he kind of checked up inside, the end zone. And then Russ threw that heater at him, which I thought was going to stick in his face mask, but he got his hands up just in time to get it. But the way he worked that, and then, you know, using the different running backs, and then very quietly, Tyler Lockett just kind of plugging along and getting his catches, and, you know, he ends up with, what did he end up with, like 7-8 catches. Russ threw it to 9 different receivers. Yeah, and Lockett ends up being the leading receiver with 8 catches for 92 yards. So just a really, I mean, they used pretty much everybody. And, it was cool to watch. But Russ just looked like he was in command, and early on, too. I mean, It seemed like in years past, the offense has taken a while to kind of get warmed up. But when it looked like Atlanta did a really good job against the run early on, they just went right to the pass and, you know, just carried on.
All right, we are going to get caught up with the latest Seahawks news, including some injury updates, next with Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. This is The Huddle. We'll be right back, so don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Joining us now is Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. John, we are glad to have you here. As always, I'm going to get it started with the injury report because I can't help myself. We need to reset. Is there anything fans should be keeping an eye on this week throughout practice?
I mean, so far all we know is what Pete Carroll has told us in his Monday press conference. We'll know more by the end of today when we see the first practice report. And that's that Rasheem Green is dealing with that shoulder injury. He did come back in the game, but Pete Carroll said, I want to say the phrase he used was there's a little pinch there, which, you know, sometimes can mean there's, you know, like a nerve issue or a stinger issue. So I, you know, we don't know that, but that's just, you know, reading between the lines what he could be alluding to. And we'll, like I said, we'll know more when we start seeing the injury report, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, if he can't go or if he's in question, maybe we see Alden Robinson make his debut after being inactive.
Hey, John. As far as what Pete said, sorry, Jake. Who were some players that stood out? I mean, it was obvious that Jamal Adams was really, really good. Russell, obviously, really, really good. But, you know, I mentioned Quentin Dunbar. I thought he did some promising things. But when Pete talked about the game afterwards, who were some of the names that you know aren't Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett?
I mean, yeah, those are the obvious ones, and I mean, we all saw what DK, and I almost think Jamal Adams was so good in that game, we kind of overlooked the way Bobby Wagner played. He was just phenomenal as well, which you kind of expect out of him. One unit that I think Pete Carroll was more encouraged by than people might think just from the numbers is the offensive line. You know, there were a bunch of sacks and quarterback hits early, but first of all, those sacks weren't all on the offensive line. Russell Wilson held the ball pretty long on one of those, and there was some sort of mix-up on that first sack that Pete said wasn't necessarily on the line. But they did clean things up as they went along in terms of the quarterback hits and all that. There were a few too many penalties, but when you consider that group didn't get a preseason, they're breaking in three new starters, I think Pete was pretty encouraged by what he saw.
John, you see that Russell Wilson won NFC Offensive Player of the Week, 88.6 completion percentage, 322 passing yards, 4 passing touchdowns, 143.1 passer rating. I mean, my goodness, this was an incredible start for the offense and obviously for Russell Wilson. But is this something that you anticipate seeing more of, or do you think that this was just taking this thing week by week?
A little bit of both. I mean, look, I don't think we're going to see them be quite that pass heavy every week. Pete Carroll even said, you know, they want to get the running backs a little more involved. And Atlanta's game plan, as we heard from their defensive coordinator talk to the media today, that they were too focused on the run and not enough on Russell Wilson in the passing game, which seems like an odd strategy. But, you know, there's going to be days where, I mean, heck, it might be this week. The Patriots have a really good pass defense. They've got the reigning defensive player of the year, cornerback. There's going to be days it's going to be harder to throw the ball than it was last week, and guys aren't going to be as open. And that's always why Pete Carroll, when he talks balance, I think people misinterpret it as, you know, 50% runs, 50% passes. And that's not what balance is to Pete Carroll. He wants to be able to do whatever you need to do within a game to win. And week to week, I think it is going to change some. But we saw how good Russell Wilson is. They know how good he is. So I do think it's reasonable to expect that maybe they're a little more pass-heavy over the course of the season than last year, but I don't think it's going to be quite like that every week either.
We talked about how stellar Jamal Adams looked. Bobby Wagner obviously looked great, as always. Is there anyone, though, on the defensive line, just that front four, that stood out to you?
Well, I mean, Benson Mayoa had a couple of really flashy plays. It's hard, you know, play after play that for someone who's not their coach and knows all their assignments know exactly how a defensive lineman played over the course of 60-some plays. But when you're breaking up a pass on fourth down and getting a sack on fourth down, that's obviously a very encouraging start from a guy they're hoping to get a lot from. And then Pete Carroll did bring up L.J. Collier as a guy that they saw some good things for. He had a good pressure really early on in the game, and, you know, that's a guy that they are expecting big things of out of kind of a lost rookie season. You know, he won the starting job, and they need him to be a big contributor.
Yeah, if forced a bad throw, a throwaway, and then the penalty L.J. Collier did. And then you mentioned the fourth downs, John, and Pete was really, and I was too, I thought maybe one of my favorite plays was Marquise Blair diagnosing that fake punt. I mean, he was right on it. And you know, we didn't see a whole bunch of, you know, splashy plays from him, but it sounded like afterwards Pete was really excited about the way he played, because we're going to see a lot more of him this year.
Yeah, I mean, we saw, they again, this will change some week to week based on matchups, but they were, you know, he played 70% of the snaps, which was, you know, a lot of nickel and a little bit of dime. So they want to get him on the field. It's kind of funny that his biggest flashy play of the game came on special teams, which is where he played most of his snaps last year. But, yeah, I mean, Pete Carroll said overall it was a good debut for him in that role, and I think that, you know, as he gets more comfortable, we're going to see more and more out of him.
John, some new additions to the offensive line. Ethan Posick getting his first start at center. Damian Lewis, the young rookie. You got Brandon Shell over there. How did everybody, you know, fare out according to the players and the coaching staff?
Again, you know, I think Pete was overall pretty happy. You know, there's some stuff they want to clean up. Damian Lewis had a few penalties. I think he had, what was it, two holds and a false start, or maybe just the two holds. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's maybe comes with just being a rookie starting your first game and some stuff they can clean up. But overall, I think he played very well, and they're happy with what, you know, not just what they've seen all through camp, but what they got out of him week one, you know, take away some penalties, and they think he's going to be a really good player. So, again, you know, you still don't want Russell Wilson getting hit, whatever it was, seven times in the first half, but they see a lot of room for growth there, and with that being the first game that unit has played together, they're pretty high on the potential for that group as they get going.
We saw some action also from Will Disley. We're going to have him on later in the show. We're also going to have Ethan Posick getting his first, like, real start at center as going to be their regular starting center. So we already talked about Damian Lewis, but that offensive line as a whole, I have to say, I was pretty impressed by. I know they had three sacks early, but it seemed like they got it together. Was that your general impression too?
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe not exactly the start they wanted, but when you know, I know Pete Carroll is big on one of his rules is no excuses, so we're not going to make excuses for anybody. But the fact of the matter is, when you got three new linemen, there's maybe a chance for some bumps in the road, and they had a few. But I really think that when you factor everything in, that was a play for them to start that way. And I mean, overall, the offense functioned incredibly well, as we all saw. And yes, Russell Wilson was amazing, but that doesn't happen with a quarterback alone. You need the line to function pretty well for that offense to go. So, yeah, and then since you brought up Will Disley, it's, you know, to me, that's just such a cool story that he's just out there doing what he's doing week one for the second year in a row.
No kidding.
Coming off a serious injury. And, you know, he's a guy that they are hoping to get a really big year out of.
Hey, John, I forgot to ask you this. I wasn't sure if you traveled or who are you traveling this year? We know we're going to probably see you at CenturyLink, but what's been sort of the protocol? How have you been doing interviews? Everything Zoom or?
Not traveling. Everything's on Zoom. And, our whole department was covering the game from CenturyLink Field. So we're still at the stadium, just not the proper one for the game. So, I don't know if that'll change as the season goes along, but right now, with all the post-game availability being conducted on Zoom anyway, we are not traveling as a department.
Okay.
So, John, is that something that you're definitely sad about, something that you've been so accustomed to over the last couple of years?
It's weird. I mean, there's part of me that definitely misses being there, but I can obviously understand the reasoning behind it when travel parties are limited because of, you know, they're trying to minimize people traveling with COVID concerns and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite frankly, my wife being home with two little kids is probably pretty happy that I'm not gone and have a little more time around the house on the weekend.
More time with family.
Especially with all this smoke when you're, you know, Saturday and Sunday when the kids just are stuck inside all day, it's rough.
So, oh, man.
It's not all bad that I'm not traveling.
Boyle's a wild man on the road, too, man. I miss hanging out with Boyle. Yeah.
Well, that's those the other trips. Thing, Dave. Even if we were traveling, we couldn't go out. You know, there's no IPAs at the hotel bar.
Oh,
there's
no
going out. It's just locked down in the hotel, so the travel's not as fun either.
Well, we're happy to talk to you.
You're exaggerating a little bit here, Dave. I don't know about wild.
I don't know if he is, John. I don't know if he is.
Compared
we're happy to
me,
talk to you in the
is,
meantime.
Anyway.
Exactly. John, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it, as always.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys. We'll talk next week.
Bye, John. All right. We are going to step behind enemy lines in the friendliest way possible with our opponent preview next, you guys. Patriots.com reporter Paul Perillo joins us on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost. It's time for our opponent preview. Joining us now is Patriots.com reporter Paul Perillo. Paul, I have to ask you the very obvious question first, which is, what was your first impression of Cam Newton for the Patriots?
Yeah, it was a little different, you know, from someone that's been around here for, you know, the entirety of, you know, Tom Brady's 20 years in New England. It was a big change. But I would say my first impression was just, wow, the guy is enormous. And the second impression was just, you know, his nonstop energy and enthusiasm on the practice field. You know, Brady had a lot of that, too. It was a little bit different. It was more of a competitive thing with the defense, with Cam. It's, you know, there's a lot of dancing. There's a lot of interaction with his offensive teammates. There's a lot of smiles. And it was hard to ignore during training camp.
Yeah, Paul, that's the thing that struck me when I first saw him down on the field the first time. It was a few years ago when we went out there. He's just enormous. I mean, I played linebacker in the league, and that dude, I'm glad I'm retired. That's for sure. I would not want to have to tackle that guy. But,
I did not play linebacker in the league, and I was still extremely impressed with just how big he was. You know, when you got a chance to sort of see him on the practice field, and, you know, you're looking at him, and then you watch the way they played on Sunday against Miami with him getting 15 carries, many of which came between the tackles, and right. They were runs that you would see, you know, the biggest power back in the game. You know, Leonard Fournette could have had the same kind of carries that, you know, Derrick Henry, or, you know, Cam Newton. Didn't matter. That's the way he runs. He's a power back as a quarterback, and that's very strange.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing to me, Paul, every year the Patriots are just sneaky good on defense and the run game. And, you know, last year, I mean, just historic numbers, holding opponents to 24% on third down. But you lose, like, all the linebackers went to Miami, apparently. And then a guy like Adrian Phillips comes in and just balls out. So, yeah, I guess I'm not asking you, Paul, how to explain how Bill Belichick does this. But it is pretty remarkable how always good defense there. And, you know, rarely, other than Stephon Gilmore, it's not like there's a bunch of superstars on that defense.
Yeah, they definitely have that mentality that they're going to play really well as a team. And I think Devin McCourty has been a guy who's been a big part of that for a lot of years. And they've had others. You know, Patrick Chung is one of the guys who opted out this season, but he's been a big part of that. They have some veterans in the back end. Their secondary is extremely impressive. It's extremely deep. I think it's by far and away the strongest part of the team. And I think you saw that a little bit on Sunday. I think they used 11 defensive backs on Sunday, and they had several plays. I would say somewhere between 15 and 20 plays with 7 defensive backs. So that's how they do it. They do it a little unconventionally. They go from the back to the front. The front 7 is not all that formidable, but I think they cover up for some of that with the way they play in the back end. And you're right. It doesn't really matter who they are. They tend to play better as a team than they do individually.
Well, Paul, you mentioned how they build their team and how they build their roster, and there's not, you know, big-name guys up front, but yet they still doing an awesome job in the run game. And last year, late in the season, they ended up getting beat up a little bit. Obviously, everybody remembers the Tennessee Titans game with how Derrick Henry ran and how they were able to be effective in the running game. Is that something that Patriots fans are concerned about, that they're still going to be susceptible to the running game?
Yeah, it is a little bit of a concern because, you know, it culminated with the Derrick Henry game in the playoffs, but they weren't very good against the run last year, and it didn't really hurt them until the second half of the season. The first half, they had some games where they weren't very good against the run, but it didn't matter. I think Frank Gore you know, as old as he is in Buffalo, had a 100-yard game early, but Josh Allen just kept throwing interceptions, so it didn't matter. You know, and they had some other games. I think Nick Chubb had a big game for Cleveland against them on the ground. Again, it didn't matter because of the turnovers that the Browns committed. But, you know, sure enough, that was an Achilles heel for them down the stretch and in the playoffs. And that has been a quiet concern, I would say, with this year's team. Now, Miami does not run the ball all that well. I think they've taken steps to try to improve that by acquiring guys like Jordan Howard and Matt Breida. But they really didn't do a great job running the ball the other day. I thought the Patriots held up pretty well there. And, you know, you mentioned the Adrian Phillips situation with him sort of stepping into almost like a quasi-linebacker role, a hybrid role. And I thought he was pretty effective around the line of scrimmage on Sunday. We'll see if that holds up. But, you know, I don't know. You guys would know a lot more about Seattle's running game. I know it wasn't overly impressive in the opener, but that may have been by design with the way they used Russell Wilson coming out of the gate. But I think Seattle would have a chance to have a little bit more success offensively than Miami did.
It's interesting. I wonder if the Patriots might also take a different approach. I mean, looking back at this week one stats, all three scores were rushing. You obviously have Newton in there with touchdowns. Sony Michel, we already know he's great. But New England's still with plenty of receiving weapons. I mean, who should Seahawks fans be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, really, in the passing game, it's just Julian Edelman. I mean, the backs catch the ball pretty well. Burkhead and James White are pretty effective out of the backfield. But in terms of receivers, it's just Julian Edelman. The second-year guy, N'Keal Harry, has been, you know, really a big disappointment. He had a couple of catches last week, but really didn't have any production, and he also had a huge fumble in that game. You know, beyond that, they have young tight ends in Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene, two rookies. Keene was inactive in the opener. Asiasi did not have any balls thrown his way. Ryan Izzo is the starter, and he's a capable blocker, and I think he caught one pass in the game for a big play, but he's really an afterthought. So in terms of the passing game, it's really all Julian Edelman, and until that changes, and I think it will be a few weeks before that changes, because I don't think Cam Newton is really up to speed. Don't forget, he didn't sign until really July. So he doesn't know the system well enough yet to be much more sophisticated than he was in the opener in the passing game. And Damier Byrd is a kid that they got from the Cardinals. You guys are probably familiar with him from NFC West days. He didn't have a single target in 55 snaps in the opener. But I do think he's a guy they plan on mixing in maybe as a deep threat at some point. So I think the passing game in a few weeks might be a little bit more sophisticated than what we've seen. But right now, if the Seahawks, you know, can contain Julian Edelman, I don't see much danger that the passing game poses for the Seahawks.
Hey, Paul, I looked a little bit at Kyle Duggar out of, is it Lenoir Ryan? Just a very small Division II school, and that was such a Belichick pick. They pick him in the second round, and here he's drawn some pretty high praise from some of the veterans. He only played in 11 snaps, but it seems like that it was kind of a risky pick, you know, picking a guy in this, you know, environment out of a really small school. It sounds like it's working out.
Yeah, you know, he was pretty impressive, I thought, during camp. Now, you know, I don't pretend to, you know, pass myself off as a scout or anything, but I thought they were using him in a lot of different ways, you know, both safety spots. Again, like Adrian Phillips, moving him down near the line of scrimmage. We haven't had a chance to see it in any kind of game action, but really looks like he has the ability to be a dynamic return man as well. We have not seen any of that yet in game action. But, you know, I think he'll be sort of worked in a little slowly. You know, like you said, a Division II school, probably a pretty big learning curve for him. And the Patriots do like to use, you know, a lot of personnel groups, and he was part of some of those on a limited basis. But I would say for Duggar, the athleticism is absolutely there. The size is impressive. I could see him maybe down the road being a guy that can lock up with some tight ends. I don't think they feel like he's ready for that now. They used Juwan Williams, a second-year corner, in that role on Sunday against Mike Gesicki. My guess is that he'll get Greg Olsen in this one, unless they want to try to match his size with DK Metcalf. I think there's some interesting matchup possibilities in this game for the Patriots. But, you know, for Duggar, I would say I was very impressed with his overall athleticism. I'm not sure he's ready mentally yet.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Real quick, what is it like out there in terms of, you know, I know there's been some issues with the air, and there's been a lot of talk about that here locally.
Yeah.
What to expect over the weekend.
Oh, it's do you guys think it's clearing up? I mean, it's still pretty bad.
A little bit.
It's clearing up
A little bit of rain.
Yeah, but you'll still notice it when you get out here for sure.
But they plan on playing the game and they're all systems go and all that.
You know, as far as we know, that's the case. Yeah.
Well, that'd be good. Maybe we'll get a little more rain and
there you go.
Things out a little bit.
Yeah, never thought I'd be hoping for it, but that's what we're hoping for.
Paul, I know, it's unreal.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, we're heading into the trenches, taking a look at the performance on both sides of the line of scrimmage and revisiting a few of the biggest plays. That's next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Now, normally Ray Roberts would join us for this segment, but we don't have him today. It's a weird Wednesday edition of The Huddle with the Mariners on tomorrow. But we're still going to go in the trenches, take a look at the defensive line, offensive line, how they performed against Atlanta on Sunday, a little bit of what we expect coming up here in week 2 against the Patriots. I'm going to get started, though, with play-by-play that I know none of you mind revisiting. It's cut number 2 right here, Adams blitz, the first sack of the season for Seattle, this one of Matt Ryan.
From his own 44, Seahawks load the line. They get to Ryan and they knock him off his feet. Back near the 35-yard line, and it is Adams again. He has been close, and that time he gets there, the first sack of the day on Matt Ryan, and it comes from the strong safety, Jamal Adams.
Dave, one of the big questions we had heading into the season was, and I think it was spurned by Greg Williams, but how are the Seahawks going to use Jamal Adams? How's he going to fit into their system? It's a fair question to ask for any team when they acquire a player that can take over a game, is how are you going to use him? I really liked the way they used him on Sunday. What did you see from them, and do you expect to see more of it?
Well, I think we'll probably see him doing all kinds of things like that. I mean, he makes plays all over the field. I mentioned earlier there was a deep in route or dig route or whatever you quarterbacks call it, Jake. it's just, you know, it's probably a 17, 18-yard route just up the field and, you know, either stops or just turns in, and he was all over it. He knocked the ball away, and it was Julio Jones. I mean, it was Matt Ryan throwing to Julio Jones. So he's making a play on the ball 20 yards downfield, and then he's coming up to the line of scrimmage and knocking guys around. You remember when Bruce early on had like a tackle for a one-yard loss playing linebacker, which Bruce does a great job. He came up and was like he read the run there. Him and Dunbar have uncanny skills of uncanny ability to predict or diagnose plays. They're really good at that. I don't see Diggs getting fooled very often. I'll tell you what, though, it's going to be a challenge this week because Cam Newton's really good with the sleight of hand. He runs that read option, and they're running it a lot. I just watched the Miami game. And he rushed for, you know, like 80, 90 yards. So it's going to be tough for him. But, yeah, Adams really is good at reading a run. I don't know if he picks up little tips or – and maybe if you asked him, he might not even be able to tell you. But it's just a sense that he gets. But, yeah, he's making plays downfield. He's making plays on the line of scrimmage. When he's not in the play, he's blasting somebody. I mean, and he reads things really well. And Dunbar's the same way. I mentioned him in the run game. So I think once he gets up to speed, this is going to be really a different defense to watch. And it's going to be fun because they did give up a lot of yards, but they're making so many plays all over the field that I think eventually they'll come together, and I think they can be a top 10 defense.
Dave, when you watch the game and you look forward to what they're going to be facing against the New England Patriots, who are absolutely going to try and ground and pound it here on the road, how do you feel? Is it a matchup that makes you anxious or worried, or do you feel like, hey, the Seahawks are going to be ready for that challenge?
Well, I think they have the personnel to handle a guy like Cam Newton. He's not the greatest passer in the world, but he's good, and then he's really good at obviously running the ball. The other thing is when you have a quarterback involved in the run game, you know, typically a quarterback hands the ball off and he's a dead player. It's 11 versus 10. Now you got to be more disciplined and you got to really, you know, be on your read. So I was talking about both Dunbar and Adams' ability to read plays. It'll be interesting to see how they handle Cam Newton, because he does a good job of, you know, kind of like Lamar Jackson, where, you know, when he runs the read option, he'll wait till the very end, like the running back's almost all the way up to the line of the scrimmage, and he'll keep the ball. He'll pull it out and keep it and run. And so that's a difficult read for those guys. So they're going to have to be on that. I imagine Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner, those guys are going to be a big part of stopping that aspect of the Patriots' run game.
As far as the offensive side of the ball for Seattle, it was interesting what Paul Perillo mentioned in the last segment about the Patriots, who were the top defense in the league last year, still showing some signs of weakness against the run. So I'd certainly expect more carries for Chris Carson this upcoming week. But there might also be more than for Carlos Hyde. I mean, what did you see from that duo, and what do you think we're going to see in week two?
Yeah, I think they're going to try to get back and run the ball. I mean, I don't think it's going to, you know, be as lopsided as it was. But, yeah, I think both of those guys look good. I think Chris Carson, I mean, it's going to have to be a little bit more coordinated up front as far as the blocking. And we'll talk to Ethan Posick later about that. I think it was good to get that one under their belt. You know, you saw Damian Lewis make some rookie mistakes, and you saw sometimes where it didn't look great, but there were times where they didn't. They adjusted, and they just threw the ball because they couldn't get the run game going. So, but I think they will. I think they will. And I don't know about you, Jake. I think Chris Carson is maybe the most dynamic running back from the standpoint of, I would hate to play against him. Yeah. Because you don't know if he's going to run you over. You don't know if he's going to beat you to the edge because he's got good speed to jump over you. I mean, it's ridiculous all the different things that you know he can do to a potential tackler.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dave, and I've been saying that I fully believe that Chris Carson is a top five running back in this league. You know, you can look at the stats and you can look at all this and that, but Chris Carson is a special runner with the ball in his hands, and for all the reasons that you just mentioned. I mean, he's a really fun player to watch, and you know, when you look at their strategy heading into this next week, he'll certainly be a factor into it. And what I love, what I saw from the offensive line overall, was there were moments where they were shaky, but they recovered. Damian Lewis had some rookie moments, but for the most part, he did really, really good in the run game. It was great to see Ethan Posick have great command out there at the center position. I mean, so this is a group that, coming into it week one, not having a real game to play with and expecting them to be sloppy, they did a great job.
Sorry, Stacey. I thought you were going to go there. Yeah, I agree. It was really good. Yeah. I hope we're all together in the same room here someday soon.
Yeah, me and Jake have been saying during the breaks that we miss talking to you. Normally, we all get to talk about, you know, like ranking the candies best to worst, and you guys have awful opinions.
No.
I do, actually. I have a question about, we've been talking about the Seahawks pass rush, no surprise, all offseason. Benson Mayoa, one of the new additions, really his second stint with Seattle, though. Cut number three right here. I was happy to see him get a sack.
Gurley, the tail of the eye, play fake. Matt Ryan being chased, rolls right, gets hit, gets dropped. He goes down, Benson Mayoa, all the way out to the 20-yard line on the sack, and the Seahawks are going to take over. Where's the pass rush coming from? Well, there's part of it. Benson Mayoa tracks down Matt Ryan for a sack, and the Seahawks take over.
Now, I know we didn't get to see a ton of these guys in camp, and camp maybe isn't always the best reflection of how a team is going to look, per se, on the field against an opponent. But I do think I can't help but be excited for Benson Mayoa finally getting the chance to kind of lead the charge there. Is what you saw from him on Sunday kind of a reflection of what you saw in camp? I mean, did you see kind of what his ceiling is there?
Yeah, you know, I thought he looked good at camp, but, you know, I wasn't quite sure. I know that they were saying great things about him, and, you know, he had seven sacks last year, and then it kind of tailed off at the end. But I was really impressed with that. He also had the knockdown on fourth down, so he made two fourth down plays. But first of all, I was surprised, Jake, that that Matt Ryan didn't throw that ball away, but I thought that he – you know, or at least try to make a play. I mean, it's fourth down, but I thought he surprised Matt Ryan. Benson Mayoa did with his speed. I thought he didn't. I don't think he felt like he could outrun him and get a chance to throw that ball. And so that was surprising to me. I was like, wow, he's got some wheels still.
He wasn't expecting that Superman leap that he did, that all out reach for Matt Ryan. That was incredible.
Oh, man. Well, Dave, I have good news. Well, maybe not good news for you. I fully plan on telling Steve Vrabel about all the nice things you said about him, because we are going to bring in the voice of the Seahawks next. Play-by-play man Steve Vrabel joins us next on The Huddle.